This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher's Keys. Hello, hello, hello. How's everybody doing? This is episode number 114 of the Out of Bounds podcast. I'm Adam Jabber. I'm your host. And we've got an awesome episode today for you with Nikolai Schirmer. For those of you that don't know him, Nikolai Schirmer is a professional skier out of Norway. He skis for Black Crows, Norona, and a bunch of other awesome brands. And he is has been doing a YouTube channel, I guess I should say, with a bunch of different series in them for the last few years. They've become very popular, starting with the series called Schirmer in the Field, going to one called Endless Winter, and now we're on one called Corona Diaries. So you can check those out on his YouTube channel. I had a great time chatting with him. I actually just recorded the episode, so it's easier for me to do an intro for once, because it's fresh in my mind. I hope you guys enjoy our conversation. We chat about everything from environmental impact to current skiing in Norway, the competition versus art aspect of skiing. I mean, we talk about a bunch of different stuff. He's very well-spoken, very smart. I feel like we could have went on even longer than we did. So thank you to Nikolai for doing that. And thank you guys for listening. Before we jump into the episode, I just wanted to say a quick thank you to our sponsor, Sowatch Hemp. Sowatch is a CBD company out of Colorado. They are a smaller CBD organization than a lot of these like big ones that you see like in targeted Instagram ads nowadays. But they're a great core of people. The product is awesome. They make some great stuff that I've been using for a long time now. And it's helped tremendously. I made a joke on our Instagram like a little while ago that was like, it's like that stuff, like the tincture that they have, the 1500 is like that Felix Felicios stuff they have in Harry Potter, like in the Half-Blood Prince, you know, when he's drinking the thing, it's like liquid luck or whatever. That's basically what this stuff is for me. It helps reduce inflammation, helps reduce anxiety. I mean, it does so many good things for you. And all that information is on their website. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you've heard me talk about them a million times. Thank you for those of you that have went on and supported their product. I'm sure you can vouch for the fact that it works really well. You can find the tinctures online. You can find everything they make online at www.sowatch.co. And you can save 15% off using promo code OUTOFBOUNDS. Try it out. Give it a whirl. And you can also find them on Instagram at sowatch_hemp. Anyway, without further ado, or with a little further ado, this is just a reminder. If you guys get the opportunity, follow us on social media. It's just at Out of Podcast across the board. You can also leave us a review on iTunes if you enjoy the show. It helps a ton. It also helps other people find the show. I appreciate that. The numbers have been great lately and people have been listening, and that's a good sign, I guess, for the season to come. I'm excited. I'm sure you guys are all excited. So I guess for real, without further ado, here is Nikolai Schirmer. Nikolai, tell people a little bit about yourself, tell them who you are, and we'll start there.
Yeah. So I'm Nikolai Schirmer, from Norway, Northern Norway. 29 years old, pushing 30, getting old. Skier. So I've been skiing since I left high school, and make a lot of films about the skiing.
Yeah. How did you start skiing? How did you get into it? Were your parents big skiers?
So my parents are more like cross country skiers.
Okay.
They do touring, where you go like cross country skiing, sort of like in the backcountry.
Yeah.
Like backcountry. That's huge. That used to be like the Norwegian national pastime.
Right.
Like in the 80s and 90s. And then I think it was actually like we had an au pair in Denmark. And she took me like alpine skiing for the first time when I was like six. And I remember that feeling of actually having support, like in your boots. Cause we would do like ski jumps. We'd build little kickers and go up them cross country skis, you know, like I did my first threes, you know, on cross country skis. And then I had like alpine skis and I was like, holy shit, like I can do anything on these, I'm Superman. And yeah, basically just from there, it's kind of in Norway, like everybody skis pretty much, at least like if you're middle class, and like 90% of the country is in middle class. So, yeah, sort of everyone gets into it and then some people fade away.
Is it, so what's the local scene like? Like from where you are, how long does it take to get to a resort or to get to a backcountry zone? Like, I mean, how long does that take usually?
So where I grew up, like the closest hill to where, like where I would go ski and build little kickers was like a 5-minute walk.
Oh, really?
And then you'd have like a little bit of a bigger hill, like a 20-minute walk. And then if you wanted to get like to, and that was like a little tow rope. And then you could go to like the local resort. I'd be like half an hour on the bus. And you know, once we got old enough to drive, you know, we could get to these like really like crazy backcountry zones in like half an hour. Like we had like alpine terrain and just massive, you know, massive, super awesome terrain, like spines and couloirs and everything. And like the irony there is that growing up, I always thought I was living in like no man's land for skiing, because the whole scene in Norway is actually like down south, like on the southeast part of the country, where it's more like actually the American East Coast, where it's like not a lot of snow,
right?
Like small flat mountains. But they had like all the big resorts in Norway are there for some reason. So I always felt like removed from the scene, and it wasn't until like, you know, later when I got to travel all around and see that I actually realized like where I grew up was the spot to be.
That's interesting. What is the scene like? Like what's the backcountry ski? Like are most people backcountry skiers in Norway or in your area? Are most people like just ski and resort? Like what's the kind of vibe? I guess so, like in the US and especially in the East Coast, like I feel like most people just go and they ski the resort, and now it's kind of like progressing into like more people are trying to find little zones and like go ski on their own or go ski touring for the first time. Like that's just hitting now. Has it been like that for a while there? I mean, what's the situation?
Well, I mean, resort skiing is pretty big. Like a lot of people you talk to, or like at least older people, only do like resort skiing, and there's a huge culture for like sort of kind of resort clubbing in Norway.
Okay.
Where people go like ski, you know, like half a day, or and then just go to the bar. And that's like, so all the big like population centers, like, or at least like on the East Coast, most people live in the southeast of Norway. And that's also where the major ski resorts are. So people there, they, you know, they'll go up on the weekends, they'll ski for like a few hours and party. But sort of on the West Coast and in the North, where I'm from, it is definitely like more of a backcountry scene. A lot of people don't ever go to the resort. Like I know people who like started like skiing on touring skis, because that's like how they learn. So yeah, it's like you have both, but where I live, it's the backcountry part of skiing is the most prominent.
Are you seeing a lot more people in Norway getting into touring as well? Like, is that, I mean, obviously like it's been bigger for longer there, but here it's like the boom for that kind of stuff and that kind of product is like it's never been, I guess. Are you seeing that kind of stuff over the last couple of years?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, there is a huge skiing culture in Norway,
right?
So everybody skis, but now there is this shift where like a lot of people would go cross-country skiing. That's huge. That still is huge. And this like touring, like flat touring skiing.
Got it.
In like these more like mountain plateaus, you'd go from cabin to cabin. That's a big thing. But now a lot of these people are moving into backcountry skiing, which is cool because you see a lot of people like getting touring gear, especially like the lighter gear, going into the mountains. Sometimes it's not so cool because they don't always get the training and take all the avalanche classes and stuff. But it is nice. Like when I went to high school, like I went to a sports high school, they just started their free ride class. It was me and one other dude in it, my good friend Vegard. And we were kind of, not weirdos, but we were definitely like not mainstream, you know, skiing and doing ride skiing and like freestyle skiing. And now like everyone I went to school with is into backcountry skiing. Like touring is huge in Norway. That's like, buy touring gear and go touring. So there, a lot has happened like in the past 10, 15 years.
Yeah, for sure. So I think the way that I learned about you was through the YouTube series, through Shermer in the Field. I'm sure that's the case for a lot of people. And I'm sure the reaction for the, from those videos has been good. I mean, they get a lot of views, it seems like, and like, they're very interesting. Like they're engaging and there's like a story to them. When did you start making those? Was that like the first YouTube series that you started and you were just like, I have it figured out. Like, this is how I need to do it. Or was there like a lot of legwork to get to that point?
Well, I had been making videos, you know, since I was a teenager. Like we'd been doing edits and, like my group of friends would like chip in and buy a camera together and I'd kind of end up editing them always. So like I had been making, you know, videos for 10 years when I did Shermer in the Field. But it was more of a, like, that was my first, like I went to law school for a lot of years, for like 6 years, after high school. And during that time, like I would still do full seasons, but I didn't have as much time to commit to the filmmaking and skiing as I'd had after law school, obviously, because I was doing law school. And I had been doing, you know, these like more traditional ski films for a long time, you know, with music and different, you know, more like art concepts. But you know, ski film is this weird genre where you have music and skiing and it's kind of like performance art, right? You just watch some kind of dancing and there's no narrative there. And as a filmmaker, I guess I was getting a little bit bored with that, like doing it. And I was also super curious about ski culture. So I wanted to explore ski culture. And I had never been to Canada before, or like spent a decent amount of time in Canada. Because like when I was in law school, I was doing my seasons in France and in the Alps mostly. So I'd be going back for, like there was a seminar every year I had to do and stuff. So yeah, no, I just kind of went to Canada. I wanted to tell stories with the skiing basically and explore different topics. It was the same time as like vlogs were sort of picking up. And I remember I had this idea that I didn't want this to be a vlog. I wanted this to be more like, journalistic and not just be about me and, you know, all that stuff. And like, I don't know if that really worked, but it was cool. Did you watch them all?
I've probably seen most of them. I actually, like, at one point last year, I had them like just on a loop. And so I run a ski shop in Western Mass, and like it's just like on a loop on the TV there because like it's good. It's like wholesome content for people to watch, and like the skiing is incredible. There's narration in it, so like for somebody that's walking around a store, like it's actually like a good thing to get them. Like you feel that excitement in you, I think, when you're watching those. So for us, it's like it's a smart thing to be playing on a TV screen in a store because everybody's like, look at that guy, like he's on this. And like obviously we sell Black Crowes and Sweet and this kind of stuff, so like they see somebody like you on these products, especially with Black Crowes, because the like the branding on the bases is so huge. Like every POW shot you see Black Crowes on everything. So it's like the product, I think, gets people, the product being the videos, gets people excited, which is which I think is a sign that something's done well.
Thank you. And yeah, no, that's good to hear that they work like that. And it was cool. I think like my favorite episode is where I was like exploring the role of the ski photographer, like meeting up with Matthias Fredriksson and my friend Guy Fatal over there. I mean, they're both my friends, but just kind of looking at all these like quirks in the ski industry that you don't really see that often in the media, you know, like what's going on behind the scenes and where people are acting like they do, what are their incentives, like looking at that and like with the resort culture too, but then also just doing these sort of like more destination pieces. Like I think my favorite episode from that show, and also the one that did the best, was the one from this cabin up in northern Canada, where we just stayed in this log cabin for a week and went ski touring.
So what, you decided to keep doing them. I mean, you did another series last year, right? Like it's, and are you planning, and right now you're in the middle of, it looks like COVID or Corona Diaries. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Corona Diaries.
What's like, your intention, you must like actually making these, right? Like, because you can't want to do all this editing and all this work, especially if you're doing a lot of it by yourself, if you don't love the production part of it, right?
Yeah, no, totally. I love filmmaking and I love the process of skiing and filmmaking. I get a huge thrill out of, you know, doing these videos that I do. And so there's like the process part of it. Like I love planning them out, coming up with a, you know, like an idea, and then actually, and you know, getting all the sponsors to come along with it and that whole production part. But then also like when you're in the field, you know, most of the time, you know, we'll be ski touring or moving around the mountain some way. And I love that experience of, you know, you're being in the mountains, but you also get that additional layer of working as a director while you're out there of how do I convey this amazing experience I'm having to people afterwards. So you like, you get to actually use your head a little bit and think while you're out there. And it's like, sometimes it's weird, you know, you have to step back from situations, be like, whoa, we need that camera over there. Most of the time it's just like, gets you something to do on the skin track. And really, for me, it heightens that experience of actually being out there in the field. And then I really love it when I come back, you know, you've skied, you know, maybe a big scary run or done something that was, you know, in a beautiful location or something exciting happened. And then I sort of get to relive it when I get back home, when I get back to the editing part of it. And then, you know, like, actually work through it and sort of have the experience all over again, tweaking it to make it entertaining for an audience. And then, of course, publishing it is fun. Comments are fun. Having this as a job is super fun. I'm very grateful for being able to do that. So, no.
Do you ever put yourself in a situation where you're like, you're skiing a line and you're filming it and like you feel like you're pushing yourself for the camera? Is that a thing? Like,
totally. Yeah. No, 100%.
You want to look good on camera, but like, it's like, yeah. I mean, are you like pushing your limits and you're like, do you have that conversation in your head where you're like, should I be doing this or am I doing this right now just for the film of it? You know?
Yeah, no, it's always, I mean, that's like the risk reward balance, right? So you have like the risk is constant when you're out there. But then the reward factor on that balance might change. And, you know, if it's just you out there with a buddy, you don't have that additional reward of, you know, being able to make a film out of it and publish that and get, you know, the joy of doing that. So, of course, that adds to the reward balance. And it'd be... you'd be lying. I think anybody would be lying if they claimed that wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
But that being said, like, I do try to keep it as safe as possible out there.
Right.
Even if we sometimes end up in spicy situations.
Yeah. So I'm assuming you've seen the project that Cody Townsend is doing as well. Have you seen, like, more people looking to your videos because that's going on as well? Because I think there's something to like when multiple people like make great content, it engages more audiences to find more of that content. Have you seen people like you said, you mentioned comments, like are you seeing people commenting on it like, oh, I'm like watching 50 Project and now I'm watching this? Like, have you, is that a thing that you're aware of?
Yeah, I actually just got a comment like yesterday. Someone was referencing the 50 Project about pressure factor, something that I guess Cody has come up with. And yeah, so for sure. And it is like the same genre.
Yeah.
Going up and down a mountain and documenting it.
Yeah.
So I do think I get a lot of the same crowd as Cody's reaching.
And it's skiing. And I think there's only in the ski industry, there's only so many people doing like quality production, like YouTube style stuff over and over and over again. You know, like people put out a part or they put out a segment and it's on YouTube, but there's very few guys I feel like that are, or girls that are putting out consistent, like, I know you don't want it to be a vlog, but vlog style like content, you know?
Yeah. No, and it's a lot of work, right? And
it is
a lot of resources to do it. So Yeah, no, I guess it's only me and Cody Townsend doing these kind of, at least, backcountry.
That I'm aware of, too.
Yeah. I guess his has more of a... So, I mean, like, this past season, I was doing a lot of videos, or more videos, like these 3-4 ones that I just released. So that'll be 11 that I did last season. And then we did a project with this French production company, Nouvelle Vague. But the year before that, so like after Sherman the Field, I did Endless Winter project. And that was only 3 episodes. And that was kind of a reaction to how Sherman the Field ended up for me, because that was just a lot of work. Like, I really ground myself down doing that. Like, my goal was to do 20 episodes from that season. I think I ended up doing like 16 maybe before I had to call it quits. And I was also doing like a big commercial project for a few other of my sponsors. But it was just a ton of work. I was like nonstop all winter, not having a break ever. And it's just that kind of, especially when you set yourself those kind of goals, where you know, like, you do one, I did one episode and you release it and you're like, sweet, that's out. And then you're like, fuck, I gotta have another one.
Yeah.
By like next week, and then you just start grinding again and you never get a break. And I really don't think that's healthy.
But so who's putting that? No one's putting that pressure on you. Like, you're putting that pressure on you.
Yeah, no, totally. I was putting that pressure on me. But that's the whole industry, though. Like, if you want to, I have heard some sponsors put pressure on people, but most of the pressure in this industry, I feel like, comes from yourself, because there's no one demanding that you be a pro skier. You know, that has to come from within, because, I mean, it's obviously really risky and takes a lot of work. And it's, you know, before you get any contracts, you kind of have to prove that you're worthy of those contracts. And so you have to do the work as if you had any contracts to prove that you're able to do it. And then you might get contracts, or maybe you won't, you know, like, who knows? Like, there's a lot of, I feel like if you want to, like, make it, as a skier, you do have to have a lot of internal motivation.
Yeah.
To want to like do it professionally.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not like, yeah, now you're a professional skier, you're set for life. You know, it's like, by no means is it that situation, I think, for at least for anybody that I know of. Like, it's not like you're a pro skier for a couple seasons, you retire, and you don't have to think about anything ever again, right? There's got to be some kind of trajectory, I guess, for like what your career plan is, I guess, right?
Totally. And it's temporary, and even if you're on like the very top, you're not making all that much money, like you say. So it's like, I mean, you are making like a fair amount of money, but yeah, like, you're not set for life.
You're not LeBron James, you know, like, you're not like you're not an NFL player or an NBA player or any of these kind of people, I guess, in that respect. That's, I guess, what I'm comparing it to, like professional athletes in other sports.
Yeah, yeah, not at all. But I kind of think that's the beauty of it too, though, you know, like, we're not in it for the money.
Yeah.
I think if you're in the ski industry, you're in the ski industry because you love skiing, or at least all the people I meet.
Yeah.
That goes for myself too. Like, and it is a huge privilege, you know, to be able to do something you love every day.
Yeah.
I think that,
that's nice to hear, I think.
Yeah. It's a good reminder for myself too. Like, that's been like when I've been working too hard and not having fun with it, I've had to like pull the brake sometimes and be like, whoa, dude, like, what are you doing? Because if you're not having fun with it, you're doing it wrong, because you're not going to get, there's no pot of gold at the end of this rainbow. With anything in it other than fun. So yeah, if you're not having fun, you're kind of messing it up. But I mean, yeah, for me, I don't know like how long I'll be skiing, like 10 years more maybe professionally if I'm lucky. But I think the industry has changed too, you know, like the platform that like Cody Townsend has built for himself now with his channel, for example, it's like, that doesn't go away. Like, there's no movie producer that can just pull the plug of his career like they could have, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah. That's really, yeah, that's an interesting point. Like, because you are, and I've talked to other people about this too, I think, but you're your own brand right now. Like, you are a complete brand, and the way you portray yourself in this, like, the video series is part of what you do, but it's not the whole thing. You know, the way that you're, which is why I guess it's interesting. When you said 10 years, I'm like, okay, that brings them to 39. Like, when you see somebody skiing at 39 years old, like, that's not particularly old. Like, that's young. That's not far. Like, I'm 25. That's not far off for either of us. Like, that's close. So, like, why would you stop, though? Why would you stop skiing at 39 or stop skiing professionally, especially when you have these outlets where you have value as a person and as a personality, I guess, and not just as a skier?
Yeah. But I think it's interesting, like, that whole, like, the arc of a career. Like, how long do people keep going? Because there are very few people that stay in the industry for
sure
that long. And I don't know, like, I guess maybe you get bored or you feel like you stop developing, or, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But I can't see, and I mean, what do I know? But, like, I can't see a competitive person that pushes themselves being like, okay, I'm just done. I'm bored. I'm over it. Like, it just seems weird to me to hear retiring from ski, like, being a professional skier, because the profession is all of the things that encompass, you know, what, like, it's all of the pieces. It's not just the skiing anymore. Like you said, it's everything. It's what you've curated over that time as well. So,
yeah. And I think in other sports, like, you see, you know, in climbing, like, you have people like Conrad Anker who are not, I mean, they're not at the peak of what they're doing, but, like, how old is he? Like, 60?
Yeah.
Or something? And he's still, you know, relevant. And I think it has to do with how you perceive skiing, too. I think a lot of people look at skiing just as a sport. Mm. I look at it as more of, like, you know, performance art, or, you know, I think it's closer to dancing or acting even than sport, because, of course, what you do physically is important, but what stage you do it on is way more important. You know, like, I get a question a lot of the time, you know, like, do you feel like all the filming and stuff takes away from the skiing? But would you ever ask, you know, Rihanna, do you feel like all the crowds and the stage takes away from your singing?
Mm.
You know, and it's like, if you want to be a professional skier, the reason you're a professional skier is because your skiing is watched and appreciated by people. So if you're skiing, you know, for yourself alone, then nobody's watching that. And, like, it has no value to anyone but yourself. And I think that's a perspective that, I think, like, that, you know, like, that lone skier who's just treading for themselves and doesn't care about anything is sort of, like, idealized. But I feel like it doesn't make all that much sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. Like, people want to be the cool guy that doesn't give a shit, like, if, like, he's being filmed or not. But, like, that doesn't do anything for you at all. Like, it's not beneficial. They also want to see that guy skiing. Like, they just want that guy to pretend that he doesn't know he's being filmed a lot of times, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, take Seth Morrison. I think he's a great example.
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And it's like, sure, he's, like, ducked under the radar now for I don't know how many years. And, like, I think he's the most amazing skier. Like, he's done the coolest shit around my home mountains. And that's anyone's ever done. But when I don't see his skiing, I can't appreciate it. And when I don't see his skiing, or anyone can see his skiing, then I guess that's the reason. I guess he's not a professional skier anymore, right?
There's that argument, though, that, like, well, yeah, and I also think that, like, he just doesn't, he's the type of personality that legitimately doesn't give a shit, so, like, it's hard to be that person and really not care if you have a ski sponsor, or, like, really not care, because most people at his age and at his current ability level even are going to be like, what do you mean? Like, you know, like, I can totally still do this. I'm still totally doing this. Like, it's a different thing, I guess. So the interesting thing, I think, is, like, people kind of put a value on, like, when he does put out something, they're like, oh, it's more special because he only does it once in a while, right? Like, there's that argument, I guess, too, which is a weird one, because I don't, like, when I watch a new video from you or Cody or one of the new films that drops in the fall, I'm, like, so psyched. How psyched I am in the moment to watch that new thing it's hard to compare to like when I watch that one Seth Morrison part. Like, I guess I don't feel any different about it in the moment. So like, even though in my head I'm like, I'm kind of romanticizing it in a way that makes it seem like, yeah, it's cooler because he doesn't put out much. It's not really, right? Like,
and I guess Seth Morrison isn't the best comparison either. Right. Because he hasn't put out anything in a lot of years.
Right.
But then you have someone like Candide, I think is a good example, because he never, he doesn't even, he never speaks anywhere, right? It feels like, but he actually puts out something every now and then. And when he puts that out, it's usually mind blowing. And that's cool. But he has to put it out, you know, like,
yeah,
if he did all that mind blowing shit and didn't film it, then like, what do I know? You know, like,
yeah, true.
Nobody would know and nobody would care. And it would be, I think it would be sad for the world, you know, because we wouldn't get to.
That's an excellent point.
And I think that's the whole. Yeah, I just had this discussion with my buddy the other day, talking about like the ins and outs of the ski industry and like playing the game and all that. And I feel like they're talking about like playing the game as if it's like a negative thing. But I'm like, it's like, that's the job, you know, like the game is the job. And like, if Candide didn't actually make those videos, then he wouldn't be, you know, a skier.
Totally. I think that's important for people to hear too. Like, it is, the game is the job. Like, you have to do certain things, especially in an industry like this, where it's like, you know, there's huge companies and there's super small companies, and they play on the same field of a very limited pool of like a very limited audience compared to like, you know, a mainstream sport. And I agree with what you said earlier about it being more like an art form. And I made this argument a couple years ago where like, I was like, I don't even know if skiing is a sport, you know, it's sport, but is it a sport? Like, I don't feel that the way most people go skiing is like a true sport. Like, the competitive nature of it is less important, and the way that you do certain things, I think, is almost more important. You know, it's about the way that you're kind of putting it out there.
I agree. And it's like, I do feel like the World Tour has gotten a lot better over the years. Like, they've sort of figured out a bunch of stuff out. But at least for me, you know, that is still not like the epitome of skiing. Like, to me, like, what I always regard as like the coolest skiing was, you know, like that amazing segment in the film that would come out in the fall when I was a kid. And now I guess it can come out whenever people release things online, or but I still feel like it is the actual act of skiing, like what you do on your skis, and not like who you beat, that's, you know, amazing and beautiful and grabs my attention. So like, I will watch the World Tour for, you know, the good skiing that is in there, but I don't care who wins.
You know what I mean?
Like, I don't care about the competition, but I love watching Christopher send it down the mountain any day of the week. And if that happens on the World Tour, I'll be stoked to watch it. But yeah, so I would agree with you, but I'm not very competitive, and I know a lot of people are competitive, you know? So I think that like, if you have a competitive, you know, mindset, then you probably be drawn to that part of skiing. And I guess then it's good to have those arenas too. Like, it's hard to put, I think the cool thing about skiing, you don't have to put it in like a, you know, like a box like that. It can be competitive and non-competitive. It can be, you know, like an art form, and it can be a sport. It can be whatever you want, you know?
Yeah. And like, I'm not competitive in skiing per se, but like, I'm a very competitive person. And I feel like, it's like in my regular, like in life, like I'm like, I want to beat everybody. I want to like, I'm like a psychopath as soon as something becomes a real competition. But like, for some reason, that side of skiing isn't the most attractive side of skiing to me, you know? Like, otherwise I feel like I'd be gravitating towards like ski racers. And like, while I think what they do is great, like, it's not the most attractive part of what this activity, I guess, that we keep calling a sport is. It's not the thing that draws me the most. And I'm sure there, for some people, it's like, yeah, the tour is the end, you know? But for me, the coolest part is like watching somebody try to huck something in a run at the Free Ride World Tour and not making it or making it. Like, it's like just them trying to send it, whether it's the prettiest thing in the world or it's the most like the highest scored thing. And like, that part matters less to me than what they're actually doing, I guess.
Yeah. So there's that. And then like, I think another key thing with skiing and ski culture is that no matter how you twist it, it is a thing that is conveyed through media. So even these live events like the World Tour, most people watch it through their screens or the photos that are published later. And so it's like the actual difference between the World Tour or, like a film shoot isn't all that huge if you think about it, because it's actually like someone skiing down a mountain, someone filming it, and an audience watching it. So it's just a matter of, okay, what kind of video do you find entertaining? Like, what kind of format do you like for your video? And I think the interesting part there is like the competition thing. It's just another story that you put on top of the skiing in itself. So like I've been thinking about that a lot. Like with Endless Winter, I really wanted to do something about, trying to ski better while lowering my emissions, to deal with the whole global warming thing that's not so good for our snow. And that's just another frame you put on your skiing to make the video interesting. So like, why should you care about me skiing down that mountain? Like in the World Tour, you'd care because, is this lady going to be that lady? Is this dude going to be that dude? But like in this Endless Winter story, it'd be like, okay, is he able to ski better now while touring around Europe rather than, riding sleds in Canada? So it kind of gives you a frame for your skiing that makes it interesting. And I think that's like where I think like the World Tour or what like I'm doing or Cody's doing with his series kind of departs sometimes from like the more traditional ski films, where there isn't really a frame. It's just like, here's some skiing, here's some more cool skiing, here's some more cool skiing. But you aren't put into like a frame of, why does this matter? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the other things I had written down to talk to you about is like that side of it, the environmental side of it, and talking about your environmental impact and actually not just acknowledging it, but doing the math of it, laying it out for people is a step that I don't think anybody else has taken. And I think it's really, at least until this point, like to me, it seems like undervalued and not talked about enough. Like I know, like you got accolades for that, and like it, people are really like, people do care, like the people that care. But you see everybody and their mother posting online about, protect our winters and, just sharing posts, but not doing enough. I thought it was interesting that you actually took that step to like show that you not only give a shit, but that you're gonna like do your part to reduce what you can,
Yeah, no, it was like, because I had been thinking about it for years. I think everybody is, even if you're flying a heli in Alaska, I think everybody, we all know about global warming. But then you all are always stuck in this, like, okay, what I do, like my little drop in the ocean doesn't matter sort of mentality. And I guess I just wanted to play around with that, like on a personal level, and see, because like I was telling myself like the previous year, I was flying intercontinental a bunch of times, and using sleds and helis and everything, and I was sort of telling myself I had to do that to do my job as a pro skier. And like I wasn't like a huge pro skier at the time, like I had a few, or like not that I am now, but like I had smaller sponsor contracts then than I do now. But my thing was like, I was trying to get to this point of like the pro skier I was trying to be. And it felt so unnatural to like put any constraints on that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like to actually constrain your skiing by dealing with this environmental question as well. That felt so weird, because like the dream of, being a pro skier, it seemed like so far-fetched in the first place. And then why constrain that, because you're not sure you're going to make it even if you don't put any constraints on it. So that was kind of like the starting point. And then I just wanted to see, okay, so I'm telling myself this, I need to emit all this CO2 to do my job right. But I hadn't actually checked to see if that was the case, Like I hadn't actually like run the experiment to see what happens if I do actually like stop flying and, go vegan and do all that stuff. And I was only able to do vegetarian for
a little while. Now I'm like more flex. So sometimes there's a bit of meat. I still try to reduce it as much as I can. But yeah, that was the framing for the project. And I thought in the end, like, it was really fun. Like, as a filmmaker,
yeah,
it was super fun because you get the story you can tell. Like, okay, I'm trying to reduce my emissions. What happens? How do I get from A to B? You know, I had a climate consultant with me. He was doing like all the maths on all my emissions. He's the founder of Protect Our Winters here in Norway, or like the chapter of Protect Our Winters. Arian is a good dude. Shout out to you if you're listening. No, that was a fun project. And what I realized was sort of like what I was mentioning initially about where I live, you know. I live in a place that's amazing for skiing. And like, we did hit, like, that winter, there was some crazy snowstorms in Austria that we rode. And we did have a good spring back in Norway, but I just kind of realized that to have good experiences skiing, I don't really need to fly all over the world and do all this stuff. And like, and it's different. Like, and I realized I had to adapt the films that I do to that format. So instead of doing the traditional ski film format where, you know, there's run after run after run after run, I realized, okay, so I'm going to get way fewer runs in my winter. So how do I actually get something that's interesting out of that? And I realized I need to tell the story like from top to bottom. And a lot of the times when you're moving around in the mountains self-propelled, then the most exciting part isn't actually the run. It's like getting to your line, all the things you meet on your way, which if like in my last release, the Four Little Corona Diary films, like all the exciting bits are sort of like, I mean, the skiing is fun too, of course, we got some good skiing in, but just kind of like moving around in these mountain environments is exciting and it's a big adventure, right? And telling that story was huge. So yeah, so like tie it all in, it was like, okay, if I want to ski in a way that's less harmful to the environment, like if I want to just travel less and, you know, don't use sleds, don't use helicopters, any of that, then I need to like adapt my output too and tell these stories that are adapted to the way of skiing that's human powered, that is slower, that is, you know, more considered in a way.
Right. All right, let me pull up some questions that people have for you and then we'll get you out of here. A couple weird questions. I'll send you after that are funny. Walt Rios wants to know, scariest ski moment of your life.
Scariest. I think the most scared I've been was when I was going to ski the... I think it's the second time I rode the Øksehøgekullar in northern Norway. I rode this like 5 years ago. 6 years ago, I rode this Kolar. It's super narrow, like barely a ski width at the top. Gets a bit, a little bit wider further down. It's 700 meters. Multiply that by 3 to get the feet. So it's really long, 2,000 feet, and just crazy steep. So like, there's no way of actually like, you're just kind of free falling and just like sort of skidding down, you know, trying to stay still. And because it's so narrow, you can't really make proper turns.
Yeah,
you're just kind of bouncing back and forth between the walls, but you can't really turn your skis sideways either. And like the first time I rode it, I was like, that was the craziest thing I'd ever done. And I was, you know, screaming at the bottom, like, yeah, it was totally adrenaline. And then this year we came back with this French production, new to like this, and they were like, what's cool around here? What do you do? And I was like, well, this is pretty cool. And then standing on top of that couloir again, after I'd done it once and like felt like I barely got out of there, okay, knowing like fully knowing what I was in for, that was just so scary, you know, like fully like knees shaking, the whole yeah. So that'll actually be out this winter, I think, with Nytt Lagvis. They're doing a segment from around northern Norway with us.
Cool.
So we did that. So it's a French production company. If you haven't heard about it, they're kind of like the European TGR. And they're So they came up to northern Norway. We went around Tromsø and up to Senja. If you're ever on Instagram and look up Norway, you'll find Senja. Like, crazy mountains, like sheer cliffs straight down to the sea. And we rode some, yeah, insane runs there too. Like this one cool OR that had like a rock portal that you had to ride through and then into this like crazy narrow choke where you had to like slalom between some ice. And it was a good time. So I haven't actually seen it yet. So I'm doing some advertising for something. I'm not sure if I want you to see it. But I think it'll be cool. Based on what we did, I think it'll be cool.
Right.
So yeah, that was my scariest moment.
Awesome. Let's see what else. Are you going to post another series? I'm assuming this is not including Corona Diaries. Are you going to post another video series on YouTube for this season?
Yes. So I guess I just posted the Corona Diaries. It's 4 chapters. I think it's like half an hour total. And then we have that French film. It's coming out. It's coming out on Netflix, so you should be able to watch it forever. And then I'm starting off a new show in as soon as the snow gets here, so like late November probably, where we're going to produce kind of similar episodes to what we were doing now with the Corona Diaries and stuff like that. It'll have more of a theme to it, I think, like or I know that it'll have more of a theme to it, but you can watch that when it gets out. And I'm working with Jonas Matila. He's the filmer who I worked with for End This Winter.
Cool.
It's French. Finnish guy, super good. Like he flies the drone like a madman and is this awesome dude in the mountains. And also Krister Kopala, who's a snowboarder.
Yeah.
Like crazy. He's like, I love going out there with him because I want to send him first for the video because I know <it's> crazy. So I'm really excited about that. We'll be just producing for 6 months. So awesome. Just maybe like one or two videos a month.
Very cool. Last question was from Matt Wagner. Favorite ski in the Black Crowes lineup?
Ooh, I would say the Anima, because that's what I would take if I was going to ski a big line in good snow.
Yeah.
But if I just was going for one ski to do it all, I'd go for the Actress.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's both are great skis. I mean, we saw both of them, so I've got some experience with them both for sure.
Yeah. Which do you prefer?
Why does it matter what I prefer? If you prefer one, you know better than I know.
Are you kidding? No,
I think for me, the Atrus, but we don't have that kind of snow. You know, the amount of times that I get to even pull out an Atrus is, not that much, you know, like most of it's like the touring, like the Camox Freebird, I think is a great, like for me, that's like the go-to touring ski for me. Like it's light, it's strong enough. Like it's like, I'm fairly heavy. Like I'm 200 pounds or something like that, like it, you know, so a lot of touring skis are light and they're flimsy, you know, but this one is strong enough, so I like, that's my ski for the lineup. I think it's the most impressive one for me,
the Freebird,
Camox Freebird. Yeah.
No, I used that too, actually. It's funny, these are like the three out of the main skis I talk about in this product thing. I'm doing now.
Beautiful. All right, I'm not going to keep you any longer. Thank you for doing this. Where can people find you on social media, including your YouTube and obviously anything else you want to plug? Go ahead.
So follow my YouTube channel this winter, Nikolai Shermer. It's hard to spell, but I guess you can put that in the description.
Yeah.
Russian, German name in Norway. And Instagram, same, Nikolai Shermer. You can follow me there. And
Beautiful. That was episode number 114 with Nikolai Shermer. I hope you guys enjoy it, or enjoyed it rather. Maybe you are still enjoying it. Check out his YouTube page if you get the opportunity. He's great at making content. He's great at the YouTube thing as a whole. The narration is great. He's a true storyteller. So check that stuff out. I think you guys will really enjoy it. Next we have Jacqueline Lammert, on Thursday of this week. And then we got a bunch coming up. So I'm excited to keep these things going. I feel excited for the season, nervous for the season, but I am excited for the season. So let's keep these things coming out. So once again, leave a review if you get the opportunity on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps grow the show. And we will talk to you guys on Thursday. Bye.